Hello, and welcome to another episode of Doctor and Me podcast show. My name is Kristan, and I am your host. Today, I have with me Dr. Patrick Obasi. He is a renowned skin cancer and reconstructive surgeon at Noble Cosmetic Surgery. His website is noblecosmeticsurgery.com. I am so happy to have you here today. Welcome to the show, Dr. Obasi.
Thank you, Kristan, for having me.
Very, very welcome. So I'd like to start off with learning a little bit about how you got started in cosmetic surgery. I know it's very interesting to read about how you started in microbiology and biochemistry. So how did you end up being a cosmetic surgeon?
Kristen, right from the beginning, when I went to medical school, I've always been interested in how to improve the well-being of people, not just the physical aspect, but also to give them that sense of well-being, to improve the way they think about themselves. So after I finished from medical school and went into surgery, I finished my surgical residency at Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. I did not go immediately into cosmetic surgery for obvious reasons. I practiced as a general surgeon, trauma surgeon, even as a moonlighted as an ER doctor for a while before proceeding to California, which is the mecca of cosmetic and plastic surgery, to do my fellowship there. So the interest to improve people has always driven me. If you look at my website and what I've always believed, we try to make people look their natural best. We do not promise you to be artificial you. We just try to make you to look your natural best, which is, you know, what we do at Noble Cosmetic Surgery. Drive to make people feel alive again is what makes me do what I do and what makes me enjoy being a cosmetic surgeon.
Makes sense. Very interesting. I know you were growing up in Nigeria, and now you're all the way in Texas by me. That's quite a long way to have come to open up your business.
Yes, I tell people that, you know, I was not born in Texas, but I got here as soon as I could. that's true. As a little child, I've always dreamed of being a doctor. And I know growing up, you read about so many things and so many countries and, talk to so many people. The United States, as you know, has been in the forefront of medicine, especially, you know, in the cutting edge of technology. So that was my main interest of coming to the U.S. To go to medical school. And of course, you know, you gravitate or you go to, you know, where your friends were. So there were some of my friends who had relocated to Texas after high school. So because of them, I felt that, okay, you know, at least I know people there. That's how I end up coming to Texas, especially Dallas in particular.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's awesome. I've been hearing a lot about a procedure that you offer at your office, the Kybella treatment. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, actually, I just finished speaking with the rep, you know, Allergan rep. They are the manufacturers of Kybella, as you know.
Oh, yes.
Kybella is the only FDA approved. Now, remember I said only FDA approved, non-surgical treatment for the submental fat or the fat under the chin. People call it the magic drug. People are still learning about it. So this is a medication in form of injection, which you place under the chin where people have submental fat or, you know, what we call the people have talking neck. What that does is gradually melts the fat, and the patient won't even know when they will just, you know, the fat will metabolize and they will just, you know, get rid of it through the kidney. And that's how that is being done. Normally, it takes about an average of 3 treatments, depending on how big or how large the fat is under the chin. So when a patient comes in there, you have to tell them, you know, that, look, they might need at least 2-3 treatments. And the treatment is tailored according to each patient. So there's no cookie cutter treatments to Kybella or any other cosmetic surgery procedure. So you have to look at the patients and see what they need and see how you can tailor it to their needs to achieve the best goal they have in mind and which you as a surgeon have in mind. So we tell people about Kybella. Instead of doing surgery, I'm a surgeon, obviously. I like to be in the operating room. I like to operate. The other things you can do, especially you can do liposuction. But, remember, liposuction is surgical. It's invasive. The risk involved is more than risk of, injecting somebody with small needle under the chin. So when you give people this option, and also remember, some people might not be candidate for Kybella. You have to let them know, that they're not candidate, because some people, at the end of the day, might end up being candidates for surgery, for liposuction, and also if they have what called a platysma band or excess skin that needs to be excised, those are not candidate for Kybella. So you have to evaluate each patient and let them know what kind of procedure they are candidate for. So there's no quick cutter, there's no cookie cutter treatment for everybody. You have to evaluate each patient and treat them accordingly.
Yes, that makes absolute sense. So if somebody was not a good candidate for Kybella, would you maybe suggest a facelift or tuck or something like that?
Obviously, yes. If they're not candidate for Kybella, then that's where you go to the next the next treatment, which is this time around maybe liposuction, if you think they have enough fat under their chin to be removed. Then you talk about, face and neck lift. You talk about, what we call the platysmoplasty, which is where, the band, which we call the platysma band, where you have to tighten them up or even excise, some of the tissue. So that's the next treatment for that.
I see. Okay. And then with the other areas of the face, let's say maybe I had some saggy eyebrows or eyelids. What would you do for that?
Well, before you start, taking out any kind of skin under or above the eyelids, you have to really evaluate the patient carefully. Make sure that they do not need any other treatment, because I know some patients will come in and say, look, we have this droopy eyelid, or we have this excess skin under the eye or above the eye, or we look very tired, we look very angry, we look as if we are sleepy. So you have to evaluate each patient. You don't just run in and you're like, okay, maybe you need a what called a blepharoplasty, which is taking out maybe the fat or the skin under the eye. You have to evaluate the patient to make sure that in the first place, what is causing them to have that excess skin or excess fatty tissue under the eye or above the eye. Some patients might come in and think that all they need is just a blepharoplasty, but they might end up being candidates for what we call the brow lift. They might be candidate for fat or filler injection, they might be candidate for facelift. So you have to evaluate these patients and be able to come up with a good recommendation for them. Remember, as a surgeon, your goal is to, your job is to recommend and advise the patient for the best treatment. The best treatment for the patient might not necessarily be what the patient has in mind coming in. So it's right to educate the patient properly before you come up with a good treatment plan with the patients.
That absolutely makes sense. I like to hear that. I wonder if what happens if a patient presents to you with maybe really thin lips, what would you suggest they have for a treatment at your office?
Well, if they present with very thin lips, you have to once again evaluate them and see what they are candidate for. If it's a candidate, there are two things you can use for somebody who has thin lips. One is filler, the filler that you can just treat. But remember, the fillers, you use it and they have to be treated again over some time. Okay?
Right.
Another thing you can do is use their own fat. Assuming they are undergoing any kind of other procedure like, liposuction or so, you can suggest that to them. Say, look, we can use your fats to, augment your lips. Okay, you can do that with a patient. You know, instead of just the filler, you can use a, you know, their own fat. If it's a patient that's doing a facelift, there are some, you know, literature that has proven that you can even use their own as well, some, you know, other tissue like what called a SMAS, you know, that you've excised and just grafted to the patient's lips. So there are, you know, a few things you can use to augment a patient's lips apart from just the fillers.
All right, that makes sense. I wonder, okay, so let's talk about if someone wants to come in and want some adjustments to their body. I know you were talking about liposuction. What areas of the body do you treat using liposuction?
Well, it all depends on what their chief complaint is. So they come in, the first thing you have to do is listen to the patient and know what their chief complaint is, what bothers them most. And once again, after listening to them and you examine them and see actually whether they are candidate for what they are asking for. Okay?
Yes.
If they're not candidate for that, what else can you do to help them achieve what their, you know, what their goal is? So somebody might come in and think that, okay, they talk about their belly or rather their abdomen, upper and lower abdomen. If you just rush in and just do a liposuction of just the upper and lower abdomen in isolation, you might not achieve the best goal for them or for yourself as a surgeon. You have to look at the sides or the flanks to see if anything needs to be done. You have to look at the, you know, the like the axilla, the fold around there. So you have to advise the patient, you know, properly. You know, look at their goal and then you see how you can, what you can do to help them. So that's how we go about that. You know, when a patient presents, you know, look at what they want to do and, you know, see whether they are candidate for that.
Makes sense. Well, tell me a little bit about a tummy tuck. I see you can get a tummy tuck or a reverse tummy tuck. Explain to me the difference between those two.
Well, tummy tuck is the traditional abdominoplasty. Okay, that's where people, you know, either have lost some weight, or if they have had kids and they have a, you know, if they have gained weight and lost it, or if they, you know, if they have had kids and then have sagging abdomen. So basically, if that is concerning to them, you do the traditional tummy tuck, which is abdominoplasty. They then placate the rectus muscle, especially for women. Then reverse tummy tuck is, you know, this is now, then the tummy tuck, remember, is the lower abdomen. You are taking out the tissue, the fatty and the skin tissue below the umbilicus. Then what we call reverse tummy tuck is when you, you know, when you pull the, when you dissect from the top, from under the coastal, subcoastal margin, that is under the breast down. Some people, you know, have undergone tummy tuck. Maybe they did not get the result they wanted. The abdomen, the lower abdomen looks good, but then the upper abdomen, they probably still have some rolls, some fatty tissue there, some SS skin there that, you know, needs to be addressed. So you address that with reverse tummy tuck. And even naturally, some people have more SS skin and tissue above the abdomen than lower the umbilicus. So that, again, you can address with a reverse tummy tuck.
Wonderful. That makes sense. Could you explain to me a little bit about the Brazilian butt lift procedure?
Yes. You know, Brazilian butt lift, you know, like I tell everybody or any of my patients, is very popular, as you know. Not everybody is a candidate for Brazilian butt lift. Before you promise a patient to, you know, the procedure, you have to really examine them. Remember, it's your own fat. That's the first thing you tell the patient. What we get is what we put in. So somebody who does not have any fat coming in and requesting for Brazilian butt lift might not be a candidate. So Brazilian butt lift is an alternative to butt implant with silicone, with silicone. So most people these days prefer Brazilian butt lift because it's your own tissue, your fatty tissue. So that is how we do Brazilian butt lift. We have a special machine here, you know, liposuction machine. We have a special grafting instrument for the Brazilian board league. But once again, it's not everybody that is a candidate. So we really have to examine you, see where you want the fight to be taken out, and you know, see how we can help you achieve your goal. I think at the end of the day, it's the proportion that matters, it's the contouring that matters. It's not probably how big, you know, the board looks. To me, I think it's how you shape the board, how you contour the board, and you know, what the patient has in mind. That's what really matters when you're talking about Brazilian board lift.
Right. I can imagine that's important. Well, let's talk about breast augmentation and breast reduction. We'll start with augmentation, and you can explain to me, you know, what happens when someone comes to you for that procedure.
Well, of course, every patient that comes in here, you know, you listen to them. They will tell you what their chief complaint is, what they want to be, you know, they want you to help them achieve. Then after listening to them, obviously, you examine them. Some people come in and say, look, want a breast augmentation. And you have to tell them, look, after examining them, maybe if they needed a lift at the same time. Okay?
So, right.
Because if it's a saggy breast, you know, you can just put an implant. People think that when they have a saggy breast or, you know, a thoracic breast, by placing an implant, that means the breast is going to come back to where it was before it sagged. That is not the case. You know, breast augmentation, definitely, you know, what it does is enhances what you already have. So you have to talk to the patient and let them know that, look, augmentation just enhances what you have. At the same time, you have to let them know that breast augmentation mainly is about proportion, because somebody might walk in and say they want maybe about 800 you know, cc or 650 cc. They might not be, you know, a good candidate for that. You know, you look at them, look at their, you know, the breasts, look at, you know, the elasticity of the skin, you know, you check all this, and there are a lot of things. You do your measurement very well, then you do your homework, you give the patient homework, and make sure that at the end of the day, they will be able to live with what they're asking for. And of course, right now, there are two FDA-approved implants. One is the silicone and one is the saline. Depending on which, you know, you have to, once again, examine the patient and find out, you know, if they are candidates for, you know, saline. Because most people get away with silicone, obviously. The saline, people who are very thin, who do not have enough breast tissue to cover it, might not be candidate for saline because they will end up having a rippling, you know. So obviously, when patients come in for breast augmentation, there are a lot of things. You say, you know, a lot of things you have to cover. You know, you have to tell them about the risk. You have to explain about the implants. You have to, you know, let them know how they, you know, they're going to take care of that for a long time. So you have to really explain all these things to a patient before you all come up to, you know, on what you're going to do for them. Then getting to the to the issue of the lift. Also, actually, let me go back to the implants. You know, actually, I think I'm proud to say that I'm one of the few surgeons around that can do the implant through the four different areas, from under the, you know, the fold, which is what we call the inframammary fold, through the periareola, through the axilla, and then of course the popliteal tuber. That is through the umbilicus, using the saline implant for patients who are candidates. Then, of course, when you come to a lift, you have to look at the patient, see, you know, the grade of their, you know, of their ptosis, or rather how sagging the breast is. So that will determine the kind of lift you will offer the patient. Okay?
Yes.
Briefly about the reduction, obviously. Some people want reduction because of, you know, they want their breast smaller. Some people come for reduction because of the fact that the breast is doesn't allow them to carry out the activities of daily living. Some have neck pain, back pain because of heavy breasts. Some have rashes under their breast. So they are, you know, when they come in, you know, you have to address that first. You know, find out what their chief complaint is, why they want a breast reduction. then obviously you go back and find out what kind of reduction you can offer to them. Because once again, there are different kind of ways to do breast reduction. So at the end of the day, you choose which one that you are very comfortable with. You choose which one that the patient will have the most benefit from. That's the simple thing about implants, breast lift, and the breast reduction.
Right, and these procedures are different than the tuba procedure that's also breast augmentation?
Yes, the tuba, obviously, like I said, is not every patient is a candidate for tuba. Remember, tuba is only for saline. Okay?
Oh, yes.
And then, of course, somebody who needs a lift is not a candidate for tuba. Somebody who has silicone implant is not a candidate for tuba. So that is how you kind of evaluate the patient and see who is a candidate or not for tuba. Of course, most people come in who want a tuba procedure do not want any scar around the breast. And they say, it's a very wonderful procedure for those who are a good candidate for it.
Makes sense. Okay, so let's jump into cosmetic surgery for men. I know we wanted to discuss the non-surgical rhinoplasty. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that's actually for both men and female, the
non-surgical
rhinoplasty. When a patient comes in and maybe they have a little bit of hump or a little bit of deviation or maybe from trauma, some area might be a little bit scarred, or there might be a little bit of depression, then you look at them, they look at themselves, and you look, both of you look at the whole thing. So first of all, you offer them that, see whether it's something they like before proceeding to the more invasive rhinoplasty, which is a nose job. So use something like fillers to kind of augment that area, to fill the area that probably have a little bit of indentation or deviation, or to repair the hump before. If they really want to make up their minds to proceed with rhinoplasty, which is a nose job or not. I think that will give them an idea of what they are going to get at the end of the day. So that's, the short form of, the short explanation of non-surgical rhinoplasty.
Right. Well, tell me what normally a man comes into and asks about when they come to your practice. I'm curious as to what kind of procedures they're interested in.
Not every man that walks into a cosmetic surgery office, looking for so many things. Some men actually are being talked into coming to into the cosmetic surgeon's office by their wives. Obviously they come in, they bring their wife for something, and at the end of the day, the wife is like, oh, so thank you, they might need this, or, this will look good on you if you do this. So that's how the men get talked into this. Okay, so they come in, I think most I've seen men do is, the Botox, try to take care of the wrinkles, okay?
Right.
A lot of, with the Botox, they come in with their wife, they try to address the wrinkles, especially if they are getting ready for other family reunion or high school reunion. They want to look younger. Some come in because of, they want some fillers, obviously, to address some issues with the face. And of course, we talked about Kybella. That's a popular procedure for men, too. Men do facelift, believe it or not, but they do brow lift, okay? And of course, the other popular procedure for men is the tenochromasty procedure. That's men who have this excess breast tissue, okay? You'd be surprised that most people that have that issue are even athletes, if you look at the way they are built. So that could be from natural, it could be from the fact that they're taking some hormones or, steroid, and that builds up. At the end of the day, they want that to be excised because, they go to the gym sometimes, they want to show off, or they go, to the beach, they want to take off their shirt, and they want that to be, of course, fixed. So that's another popular procedure for men. And of course, we do have anywhere from calf implant, we do have pectoral implants, all kind of implants for men. So, those few ones I mentioned earlier, the most popular ones.
Right. All right. Well, how about you talk to me a little bit about the practice and what patients can expect when they come and get greeted at the door and walk in there?
Well, Noble Cosmetic Surgery Center is a full aesthetic plastic surgery center. We do everything, you know, from head. You know, we do, obviously, I've said it, we do a, you know, face lift. We do brow lift. We do all kind of injectables, you know. Of course, all neuromodulators, Botox, fillers, do a lot of liposuction. We do a tummy tuck. We do all kind of breast, you know, implants. We do breast reduction, breast lift. We do butt implants, Brazilian, you know, butt lift, calf implants. So it's a full aesthetic plastic surgery center. And of course, we talk about the cosmetic surgery for men. We do scar revision. We do, of course, earlobe repair. Another popular treatment we give at Noble Cosmetic Surgery. And we have an OR at the center there, and we have an anesthesiologist that come in to help with the surgery. So it's a full aesthetic plastic surgery center in Plano, Texas. So we're proud of it, and we're still growing.
That makes sense. Thank you, doctor. Dr. Obasi and the team at Noble Cosmetic Surgery offers a broad range of surgical and non-surgical procedures for the face and body. Give them a call or visit the website at noblecosmeticsurgery.com. Thanks again for listening to another episode of Dr. and Me podcast show.